step.
So, the regular conditional non-accredited vocational program license application for technology testing. Let's get going.
Oh, short and sweet. Technology testing is seeking a conditional vocational program license to offer training in the operation of tower cranes. They have posted the $15,000 surety bond, and here representing the institution is Adam Poppenberger, and your board member lead is Mr. Tharp.
Hi, welcome, and again, thank you for your patience today. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Adam Poppenberger.
Okay. Mr. Poppenberger, you want to make any opening statements, or just be available for questions?
No, we can proceed as you see fit.
Just overall with your school, I was confused because there's the other entity which they're similar, I guess. You guys have the same board and stuff. So
yes.
You haven't been doing this training, have you?
I believe in 2013, prior to me being there, we were operating, and I believe you came to the school and told us we had to stop operating. We could do continuing education, I believe, and then corporation to corporation is what we could also do.
Right.
So that's been since 2013. That's how we've been operating. Is if someone comes to us, they're already a crane operator and they want their CCO certification, which is there's a national organization that certifies crane operators called NCCCCO, and that's what we train the people for to take that exam. So some corporations that our sister companies work for, we'll do work for them. They see how safe we are. They say, you know, who trained you? We say our in-house safety division trained. And then they'll say, you know, can you set us up with some crane operators that might need some continuing education.
So where I was trying to get at is you heard the last school was operating without a license.
Correct, yes.
Make sure you weren't, and it sounds like it's covered, right?
Correct.
Right, no, we did a site visit, that was a couple years ago, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, I wasn't there at the time.
Yeah,
but,
so.
That's all, we don't have to go into it anymore. I was a little confused about reading through here.
No. Sure.
Because M Holdings and,
there's a lot of operating, there are five companies, operating entities, and then they're all owned by M Holding Company.
Yeah.
Okay, so who did the application?
That was me.
Okay. Good job. Thank you. It was thorough and easy to read, well referenced, and that is always appreciated, especially after a long day like this. So, your first year projections and your second year, where did you come up with those? So I'm on page one of the financial parent stuff. You say 200 full-time.
And that's
300, and that seems extremely aggressive to me.
Yeah, well, that's based off of, we've had to turn away a lot of people. They say, we need training, and we say, well, can your company pay for it? They say, no, we want to pay out of pocket. They say, we can't do that. We've actually had people that have offered us double the amount of tuition that we charge. They say, I need to have the CCO certification. And so that's based off of the people that we've turned away, and then it goes up to 300 the next year because in November of 2017, OSHA will require all crane operators to have some type of certification. Was supposed to occur back in 2014, and it didn't happen. It got pushed back because a lot of people said, well, you know, I've been in this industry for 40 years. We've got some people, I don't have a CCO certification. I can't go and get it right away. So it moved back to 2017. And so that's why the aggressive numbers there was before.
Okay, again, that's not a good saying rule. One thing we learned up here after seeing application, and you saw it a couple times today, where schools we approved a year ago had no students.
Yes.
So I just... always say look at that and then pare it down by 75%. That's probably what you're looking at the first year. But I wish you well. I hope it does go.
Appreciate it.
It'll be good for you all. Let's see. The corporation documents fine. Insurance is fine. Fiscal information. Program of study stuff was well documented. Oh, yeah, here it is. Under admissions requirements, I'm in Section 8, but it will come through in the catalog, too, so we can probably go right.
Sure. I believe admission requirements are GED or diploma.
Yeah, no, but there is some initial interview. I'm always sensitive to this, especially being the chain chairman of the complaint committee. I just wonder do you have a grading rubric for that? How are you going to... If a student comes to me and said, the school didn't let me in based on my interview, and I think it's unfair, it's biased because I'm so-and-so. How would you be able to prove that it wasn't, that you have a rubric?
I think it would be subjective. We have a lot of professionals in the industry that can talk to someone and, I guess, understand whether they could fully grasp the training that we're giving. So it is subjective.
That makes me very uncomfortable.
I understand that. Thanks, Mayor.
Very uncomfortable. You should try to develop some type of grading, some type of rubric that you would use to grade those. I guarantee it will help you out when somebody claims you didn't let him in. I mean, I have no doubt you have the best intentions and you probably would let him in based on the grade, but people, trust me, derive all sorts of reasons you didn't let him come to school and don't want to see that. So that's it's just a notion, you know, a cautionary note.
And a little bit of the organization of your admissions requirement. You say you only accept for admission to a training program students with medical clearance cards,
right,
18 years of age or older, yes, demonstrate in advance of class start date the ability to satisfactorily complete prescribed training, period. And then you say methods to determine a potential student's ability to satisfactorily complete the prescribed training include one or a combination of the following: high school diploma or GED. Mm-hmm. So that really, high school diploma or GED is really part of the top part, yeah, because it's required.
Yes.
And the way this is worded, all the rest of it is moot, because as long as I have high school diploma or GED, mm-hmm,
and
I have that one of them.
Yeah. So would you recommend just removing the bottom portion and having the 18 years, the medical card, and
yeah, GED? That first part, those are you have to this, and this, those all have to be, and then if it's in one of the following, and it's the initial interview and letter of recommendation, that's fine, but the one of the following is initial interview, letter of recommendation, high school diploma, and then acceptance and enrollment. So the organization is such that makes it a little bit hard. I had to like read it three times to know what you really wanted.
Sure.
And you've heard from all the things. What? Medical clearance card. Too.
Yeah, medical clearance card is already part of it, so that's like the first statement.
Sure.
And again, like if students don't understand what it is, they'll complain about something, and we have to explain, you know, they filed the policy,
right,
and you read it, and it turns out they couldn't follow it.
Okay.
Good point, the structure and that. That's good. Okay, if nobody has anything else on the admissions department, so we're going to go to tab 9, the grievance procedure. I think it generally it's okay. I just have a couple questions.
Sure.
Why human resources? This is a school. Wouldn't this go to you or the school? I mean, it says if they want to file. If all good must file a written complete with human resources, and they're not employees, so I'm just wondering why that's written that way.
That might have been an oversight, because this is something that Terry and I looked at and we changed, and I think that might just have been an oversight of me leaving human resources.
I would change that to, I think you're pretty much the sole guy besides the instructors. You don't have a director of education.
Correct.
So it'll probably be you, campus president.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. And I do like that you said, the spirit behind, you must make a good faith effort to resolve directly with the persons involved. The only caution on that is it's some type of harassment or threat. You can't really want to make the person go talk to that person.
Sure.
That's a great thing, like, you know, when feasible.
Yeah, I would just put when feasible one.
Okay.
Just to make a little, and I do appreciate your time frame, from the sense that you let them know when they got to get it, when you're going to get back to them. Such, but stick to that.
Okay.
That's another option. 5 days is pretty quick. That's what you want to do. We're fine with that, but you don't have to make unrealistic expectations. But what you do put in here, you have to live by it, okay?
I think it was that short, so if someone did come back like a year later, like people might have left the school.
Well, you heard the whole discussion.
Yeah, so is that something?
That's a whole different thing, but you're talking about responding to them after they've completed.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
And you said 5 days. You know,
yes, no, that'll be.
I'm saying that's fine if you want to do 5 working days. We're all for it. But,
sure.
You know, most people give themselves 10, 15, you know.
And if you're on vacation or you're at a conference.
Yeah, if you're gone.
Okay.
You know, so I would probably change it just to buy yourself some more time, because again, we look for what you say you're going to do and then hold you to doing exactly what you say you're going to do.
Sure.
And you're saying to the school president or designee, so if you are on vacation, you can say in my absence so and so. If you don't have or designee, it means they can only give it to you.
Okay. And this doesn't have the 2-year language that was discussed previously.
Doesn't
Is that something that doesn't have to have that in there? Okay.
Yeah. Caveat that. Did anybody have anything they wanted to grade it? I didn't. I think it looked pretty good to me. Covered everything. Had all the paginated correctly, so I really liked it.
I used to be in charge of enrollment agreements at UTI. So
I did, yeah. Yeah, I see you come from UTI, so you do have industry experience, and so it's good. Well, not maybe the running schools, is what I'm at. poke along in here. Oh yeah, on page 5 of the catalog.
Yeah.
It's just a note again, and maybe, you know, it's, we're in Arizona, we're approving for Arizona, but then I found it odd that Arizona is not one of the people that required certification. Right, is that true?
That's true. They
but maybe in 2017?
In November 2017 they will, unless they push the regulation back.
That answers my question. I just found that, you know, different. I just want to make a compliment to you on page 7 of the completion requirements. I very much appreciate how you very clearly said graduation does not mean you're NCCCO accredited, and thank you for doing that. That'll keep a lot of. You're very clear, capital, underline, and I appreciate that. So don't let that slip out anymore. Keep that in there. On page 8, you address weapons on campus, the last paragraph, which is, you're right, of course, as a private institute, but you should post it properly.
Okay.
I would say it's just a good habit to post no weapons because we live in a state that allows them.
Sure.
That's by law. So, but it is within your right to restrict that. It's generally good to have a sign, though, that says so people don't quibble with you. Again, this is everything I'm giving you so far is suggestions. Nothing that's going to do that. I had a question on the next page 9. And I don't know, I might have missed it in my review, but I don't think so. You list very nicely the dress code and what should be worn. But you don't say if you provide or it's that they need to provide this. Is it part of fees? Is it not part of fees? Is it something you provide?
It would be they provide it.
Okay. Then I would add someone in there. These items are provided at the student's own cost.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, can go ahead.
On the refund policy, I'm looking at it where it's, you know, within the section, so it's by itself. So it's in section 10.
Right.
We there?
Yeah.
And number 4 says all students requesting cancellation after the 3-day period described in section 4 above are subject to $100 administrative fee. And this is section 4, so I'm not sure if it's referring to section 4 on a different page that I don't have,
mm-hmm.
or is that just an error?
That's just an error. Yeah, it should be section 3. My apologies.
And then in number 6, when a student withdraws or is terminated after the commencement of classes, whether initiated by the student or the school, a refund calculation will be performed. That's good. But that says, A, students are obligated in full based on the program detailed on the student's enrollment agreement period. That makes it sound like I'm going to do a refund policy, but you're not going to get it because it's fully obligated.
Yeah.
I
see that. I think the intent was that whatever program is on the enrollment agreement, that's what you are. But I can see how it's worded.
Yeah. See, and this one says, and I imagine, yeah, you're trying to say that it is based on the dollars and the program that you. Are enrolled in is what it's applied.
Correct, yeah, because they could change. Yeah, that like the dollar amount could change, obviously, go up or, yeah. Sorry, I'll change that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Does it say anything about books and supplies?
I'm not sure.
Are books and supplies fully refundable, part of the tuition?
I do not believe it is. They are. I believe
they're separate in the catalog of the enrollment costs.
So make sure that's referenced in the refund. If they are, you know, non-returnable, non-refundable, they should, within your refund policy, there should be a statement.
Sure.
That. And it doesn't sound like you're doing the percentage less a fee, which is fine. Just make sure that you are doing it the way that it is worded here, what you said you have to do.
Sure.
All right, page 12 of the catalog, if you move back.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm just trying to reread something. So I just want to make sure I read this right under re-enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
A student must retake any course that he or she previously completed. Is that a mistype? Is it a student does not have to take any retake any course, or are you saying if they re-enroll, they're going to do everything all over again?
I think if they re-enroll, then they'd have to do everything all over again. But is that put us in the same situation? You talked to the school earlier where they could go to the last day and then drop out.
Well, re-enroll. I don't have any problem. I just think it's worded weird.
Okay.
I would say maybe something like re-enrolls. If you re-enrollment, all re-enrolled students who must retake the entire program.
Okay.
Or something of that, because that to me sounds like a misprint, like you meant to say you don't have to retake the. Again, just a point, but it seems confusing.
Okay. So,
good job with your student services, clearly denoting that you do not guarantee job placement in capitals and underlying. We already talked about this. Council refund, you've talked about the breakdown. Payment plans, that's clean. Yeah, I'm still confused about 14, and it really kind of goes into marketing material too, which I don't really see. Do you have marketing material? Are you going to provide marketing material?
It's mainly going to be the school catalog handing that out, and then we have.
That's rather expensive.
Yeah.
You should maybe think about getting some kind of.
Just like a pamphlet, just a one page pamphlet.
Well, I mean, I don't know. The marketing guy, but I know, you run schools. I don't know how you want to drive students. I'm sure there's industry regs or industry ways you can do it. But again, anything, you just have to make sure. We generally want to see those pieces to make sure they're compliant.
Sure.
There's a lot of words you can and can't use on those.
Sure.
So you do what you want, but I'm just saying I didn't see any in there.
Go back to refund policy real quick. On page 14 of the catalog, you say there are fees. Non-refundable registration fee and non-refundable book fee, so make sure that is
that cross-referenced. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Okay, I'm going to go all the way to tab 17, if you would, and I want you to go to the last instructor resume in there.
Yeah.
I would tell you who it is, except it's not filled out. It's filled out with educational information, but I don't know.
I think the reason we did that, the person is Douglas Jensen. He had so much CCL certification, rigor certification, stuff like that. This next page is a continuation of that.
Oh.
So it's Doug Jensen on the first page. And
I
the next
thought
page
the
is
signatures were the same, but I didn't know. Okay. That makes sense to me now. This is a guess game. And then lastly, in the very last page, fire inspection.
Yeah.
What you gave me shows that you didn't pass, so.
This is what.
It says notice of noncompliance.
That's what I thought originally as well. And when I talked to the fire instructor at the very bottom, if you look, there's a compliance box checked. I don't know. I still couldn't understand why it says noncompliance. I asked, are we in compliance? And he said yes. So I'm not so sure why
the document says it. Signed. I missed the little tiny letter.
Yeah, I don't know why they did that.
When it's titled bold noncompliance.
That's how they.
Is this a trick on me? All right, that's what I have. Any financial things that you see there?
Yeah, just a couple of questions.
Sure.
So for the first year and a half or so, you've lost some money starting up.
Crane's are expensive.
Those should those be capitalized as assets?
They should be, but my CFO for M Holding Company put this together, so she'll be able to speak a little bit better on it than I can. If you have any questions, I can take
it. Yeah, I don't think there are cranes in here.
Okay.
So I was just wondering, because it's a big turnaround from where you are now at a loss of $107,000 to a profit of $83,000. And so what's the plan for getting from point A to point B?
I think it's just more enrollment, just having more students enrolled. Like I said, we had to turn away a ton of people just because we didn't have the license.
I noticed that doesn't include any tuition, so that's just the rest of the business. So far, right? So your tuition is what you're counting on.
Correct.
Making that happen. Okay. And then what's the, and this is a little bit, there are payments due to the technology. Can you just explain, let me see if I can find this here. The stock equity, is that within technology testing, or is that from the M Holding?
I believe it would be from M Holding.
The $1.1 million.
I believe that would be M Holding Company.
To approve the conditional vocational program license application for technology testing, with the following stipulation that they maintain the $50,000.
Post.
That's 15 currently.
Oh, they got a post of
15,000.
50. 50. 50. Yes. 50. Excuse me. That they post the $50,000.
Changes it required or suggested?
Those are all suggested from me. I don't know if you've had any required.
The refund policy is required. We just have to reference the non-refundable fees within the refund policy.
I amend my motion then to with the stipulation of posting the $50,000 and making the changes as outlined to the refund policy. Do we second?
Second.
Any discussion? I just have one question. Why is it technology testing?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was called Titan Trucking Company in the 70s, and they changed it to technology testing. I don't know.
You know, I'm looking for, like, the last ones. You know, the guys are doing the coder boot camps and stuff like that. You know.
Next year, can you come back with a better answer? Just make something up.
Yeah, I'll talk to the president. And, he's an interesting guy, so.
Okay. So. all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Yeah.
Mr. Harris, congratulations.
Congratulations. Thank you very much. Thank you. Look
forward to seeing you about how it's going.
Thank you. Fear of perseverance.
What's that?
Fear of perseverance hanging out.
Yeah.
In the cave.
Yeah. No, it was fun. I got to learn a lot of different things. I got to see an entertaining gentleman come up here. So thanks, everyone. Have a good day.
Entertaining.
Call to the public. Public input is encouraged. Presentation must be limited to 5 minutes. Please be aware, however, the board may not discuss, consider, or take action on this meeting on any item not granted this agenda. During the meeting, additional public comment may be requested, but it's generally not allowed. Is anyone in the public who would like to speak?
Good job.
Thank you, sir.
Now the board business, Ms. Stanfield.
I gave you the listing of the new programs and the fact that we did the October license renewal, the closed schools, continued with the closed school teach out, who's on cash monitoring, the latest on DeVry, where they reached an agreement with Ed regarding the intent to limit.
Yep.
But to eliminate the statistic that they had issues with and post an LLC. Any questions on that? No?
FTC to come.
FTC to come? Okay. What was my other? Okay, I'm going to do this quick. ADOA feasibility study.
Yeah. What happened out for Iowa? Do they just...
Oh, there's Sarah School. They still have a physical campus, but because they also could have recruited for their online, in Iowa, they maintain online licensure. Once they were approved as Sarah, I was Sarah, we're Sarah, and they were approved as Sarah, and then, there you go. Bye.
Gotcha. Thank you. Because I didn't hear anything about that. I don't know. All of a sudden, I see a closure.
No, there were a couple of them that were like that. Upper Iowa, Benedictine.
Benedictine's still there.
Yeah, but they had a double license.
for better word.
And St. Xavier, they're on their way out?
Yeah. They're in teach out.
Do I not have them on the teach out list?
You do.
Okay, thank you. Feasibility study, had quite a few errors, I have 20 that just had to do with hours alone. Long story made short, I scheduled a meeting, I decided to bite the bullet and go schedule a meeting with Craig Brown, the director of DOA, and share with him the errors, because I figured if legislation dropped and I'd have to tell him of the errors, and the legislature would be better that he knew that I was going to say it than said he had errors beforehand. Kevin's going to go with me to take pictures because they nailed us so badly. One of the things that they just ripped us on was the poor warehouse. So I want them to grasp what that looks like. The move to 1740, we went to a meeting last week?
Yeah.
Last week on it, 1740 on Adams. It kind of became clear, we were all thinking that, because initially we had no input, but they hadn't asked us how our agencies are set up, and all of a sudden it was everybody gets 250 square foot per cubicle, and they were just taking and dumping us over. That was their plan with, as a result of consolidation. And what I took away with it was the legislative council postponed the funding approval and tabled it until December because they hadn't asked any of the agencies what the requirements were. And one of the directors who asked 50 billion questions, finally one of them was, are you doing the design based upon how the agencies currently are structured or what you think they may be if it's consolidated? And they actually answered how the agencies are structured now. They also said at that meeting that they acknowledged that consolidation would be a process as opposed to like what it was last year where, again, legislation had been dropped. They don't know. I mean, so I think people realize that it's, you know, you can't just flip the switch and do what they were wanting to do. I could be overly optimistic and hopeful because I don't want it to happen, but that's the latest. So keep it posted. That meeting, I think, is next week. Once legislation gets dropped, I'll let you know. The boards cannot or should not take position politically. It would not behoove us. It would have to be our licensees, and the licensees of the health boards and the licensees of, you know, county and so on and so forth, to get the legislature and the governor understand the negative effect it may have. ACICS, you all know that they appealed. Rumor has it'll come out right after the election. Is it right after?
Right after the election. Well, no, it was right after the first of the year.
I thought they said first part
of January. Was in November.
I think, well, first I've heard November. I don't know. I've heard two or three, you know, it'd be after the election. I don't know. And I don't know if ACICS will go further because I know they're kind of lose a lot of schools regardless. So I don't know if they have the financial wherewithal, but that, I don't know. That's just my guess. 2017, I will probably, if it's okay with you, once I get it, standard is our fourth Thursday. I'll just send you out look at guides, invites, and you can just put them on your calendar. Will that work?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Update on ITT, Kevin.
Yeah, I think you heard about it at the beginning. One, I want to thank you very, very much for when we heard EDMC today and you considered the bond on them. You have no idea until you get a chance to go over and take a look at what these schools look like when they die. If you recall, the last meeting we had, ITT was in here at the time we realized that they were going to die within a week, and that whole process went very, very quickly. And we've received hundreds and hundreds of phone calls from students that are completely lost, don't know what to do. So it is it's very much a burden on the state. Financially and time and such. So in terms, we've retrieved the records from the Tucson storage unit, which are all the old Miller Institute files. Along with Tempe, which are all the old Miller Institute files, and the files from the Tempe campus and from the Black Canyon campus, and that's what we have. We're still working with parchment. We don't have the electronic copies of any of the student records yet, nor do we have any of the ledger cards, which you've already heard that we don't have that. We can't process that with strife claims until, I really don't know when, through bankruptcy, which could take... I'm still waiting for my check from Anthem from 2.5 years ago for my reimbursement check. So I think it's going to be a while before we get anything from IT.
Well, and one of the things that we learned, which is why I went down this road with UEI and whoever it was, we learned how critical, through our conversations with the department, when we realized that the department was having ITT submit to them, you know, student records, it was like, oh, well, why are we not doing that? And then, and it's always an issue, and it helped with, like I said earlier, it helped with parchment, but if we get them in advance, that will help, as well as this time was the first time we were able to, when we got the student listing, Kevin's technical enough that he could do a mass dump emails. And we could have a meeting that was hosted at Jason School. Thank you very much. Where we had over 300 students there. Yeah, you were there. Dr. Mittman was there. He stood by me while the cameras were going.
Yeah, I was on KJCC.
Oh, were you? Because it was like...
Nobody asked me to stand next to you.
Well, he did, and you know, he answered some of their pointed questions, because I probably would have gotten a little snitty. You know, he was nice.
Standing with the board of nurses, and we were told... not to attend.
Yeah, I'm sure you were. So that was a first, and it was so that's why I'm pushing real hard for the bond, because it's killing us. I'm done.
I will tell you, we're fairly close with working out some kind of teach-out agreement with Brown Mackey for their students. Everybody's working hard on that.
Who's on?
Tucson.
Tucson and Phoenix.
Oh, that's part right. We have one there.
They first told us this is not going to happen. Now they're like, all right, we're getting some calls, so we need to look into this.
Oh.
Yeah.
You're running out of money.
Well,
okay.
Some of this stuff going on with them, it's not public yet.
Not sure.
You want to hear about this?
Yeah.
Do it.
Sorry, I know it's 4:35.
That's all right.
Thanks for sitting here all day long. Nice to see you.
It's great to see you guys. It's kind of hard to keep my mouth shut back there. Hard not be all in that George David.
Yeah, sign language, that was appreciated.
You like that? Yeah. Oh,
he's doing a little gladiator for him.
Like the face.
God, it was bad. I told Tyler, that's why you sit in the back.
So let's adjourn the meeting real quick. Adjourn the meeting, because this is just a...
training.
Are we still on?
Yes. Agenda. So. Well, your agenda.
Never mind.
Go ahead. Adjourn the meeting, yes.
Yeah, so, but there's no one on, right?
No, be there's no one on this phone, but we're recording.
Okay. Well, you know, maybe if we want to go into some of that, we can talk as individuals, not as a board. Well, you guys all heard Gainful Employment. I was on the board. We talked about it. But just who knows, who can define what the rule is in the room? Okay. So for the offer, for you guys, have you actually looked at your rates?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, my company never.
Have you personally done it?
Yes, my HR campaign.
Yeah.
Have you personally looked at and seen the debt and earnings, not the ratio, but the actual number?
Not that far.
Okay, so
we just do it.
So you just know pass-fail zone, right?
Yeah, pass-fail zone.
Okay, so I'm probably like the only operator that I know that has not just done that, but parsed the data before the tools were out, seen how the distribution works, because basically this is a statistics game, and so that's what I wanted to pass on to you all is how what's really going to influence things or not, because the department's interpretation of it is. A little naive. I'm fine saying that on the record.
So, you guys know my background. Generally speaking, 23 years in higher ed, chairman of this, college operator. But I was a data guy, as a network engineer, which kind of makes me, and then a marketer, so it made me just kind of schizophrenic, but you know, I look at things differently, as you, most of you guys know. But I've also been following these regs for a really long time. I was on CAPSCU's board, CQ's board, when we sued the department over Gainful. And now I had my program review announced less than 24 hours later because I was the chairman of the litigation committee. So it was me suing the department. Then all hell broke loose. And I'm a member of PERC and all that. But and you guys all know that we have the term Kyrsten Sinema said to me on Monday was that the administration is embracing regulatory zealotry, which, you know, and I'm not going to have the presentation talk about that so much.
She said that on Friday as well.
Yeah, she talked to her.
Yeah, she did. She spoke at the round table we were at.
Oh, great. So,
and the crate put on, I should say. I was just saying.
Oh, that's great. So, that's happening out there. Some other people talk about like the weaponization of regulation and that kind of thing, but it's certainly a truth. But here's the, I'll say it a broad term, here's the issues I see in terms of state board. So I'm going to talk about the issues, I'm going to talk about just broad training on what is GE, but what the implications I think are for you guys and the state that I don't think we're talking about very much. And then I have an ask at the end that I think are things that the board can do. You know, so whereas it's bad for the board to try to politic for the savior of its own board, the board does have a very loud voice when talking to other regulators, because you know they trust the board. And when Terry and I wrote in on the state off stuff, they called us. You know, the Department of Ed called us like, "Hey, regulator, regulator, this is not going to work." And they're like, "What do you mean it's not going to work?" You know, so they trust it coming from you two, you know, Chairman and from Terry. So. But so far, the state's databases, the state's actions tend to be school level. You know, the way the trial works, we here at the state, you know, if the school's on show cause, we put them on probation, right? If we put them on probation, then the creditor puts them on show cause. But that's a school level sanction. And what's happening really soon, like next week, is we're going to start seeing programmatic level stuff happen. Okay, and the state needs to start considering what it's going to do about programmatic level issues. The state's required, as you know, to make sure schools adhere to all applicable laws. So it's important to know about this new law and how it's going to affect everything, because now all of a sudden, as you're evaluating schools, the question about what's your current ratio, what's your composite score, what's your CDR, what are the gainful employment rates for all of your programs? Probably needs to start showing up on applications, renewals.
Some sort of evaluation, yeah.
And some sort of disclosure on it. The state evaluates consumerism, and the Department of Ed has just shoved down everybody's throat what kind of consumerism seems to be in place, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But it's also published new data that is going to be confusing for students, and it's especially confusing because it's sector-specific. Coming down the pipe, I heard someone had, what was the longest enrollment agreement you saw today?
4 pages.
No, you had 8.
7.
Yeah.
7 of 8, but it ended on 7, right? That's what last. I would expect those to triple very soon. And so the as I was saying about it, the state cares about consumerism, we care about knowing when a school's in trouble, care about sanctions, we care about enrollment agreements, we care about refund policies, right? So all of a sudden, we got issues that are going to affect all of those in the state, and that's really what I'm talking about. So also, this is not a new rule. This rule came out, has been being kind of beat up for a long time. It was promulgated officially in 14, but it's just now, in the last 2 weeks, that the realities of it are coming into play, and how it works is really actually understood. So just so you know, the rule has two parts, just a completely ridiculous amount of disclosures that are ever-changing, and if you've actually, who's actually read the CFR on the disclosure requirements? Okay, go read it. 668.413. is where it starts, and the disclosures are listed. It's not that long, it's one page, but you read that, and you're going to realize.
What's the number?
Repeat that answer.
668. Scroll down the 400s.
668. What?
400s.
It's in the 400s. It's very clearly articulated on the ECFR what the gainful employment section is, and it'll say, I think 413 is disclosed. If it's not 413, it's 400s. It's super easy.
668.
there's a lot of them that are going to start getting put it out, and the department keeps changing. I'll talk about that in a minute. So the pass, a school's got to have their rate, their debt-to-earnings rate at less than 8%, or their discretionary rate of less than 20%. So there's really, the way they structured this, now that people are starting to see the stuff, it was like, okay, you got pass, zone, and fail. That's not the best way to think about this. You have pass or not pass. Okay, that's really important as I get into this. So you're either passing or you're not. And I remember people talking about zone as fail, but when I talk about this in a minute, you'll really see how that works. So you have 0.08 or a discretionary income of less than 20. So what that means, basically a good rule of thumb, if it's a bachelor's degree, the average earnings a year and a half out has to be 40 grand or more. Period.
How far out?
Year and a half out, 40 grand or more.
Year and a half, you're going to make 40 grand after you graduate.
Mm-hmm. Or you don't pass.
A year
so
and a half.
For a sociology degree.
A year and a half out, 40 grand or more. On a bachelor's. Now, this changes depending on the length of program. We'll talk about this. But generally speaking, the national average for a bachelor's degree debt is 30 grand, and the data I've looked at so far is substantiated now. Even on, like in my school, which is an expensive college, it's 30 grand. It moves like between 28 and 32, our debt. And completely random, just it's a demography issue more than anything. So fail is greater than 12 or 30, and then in between is its own. So fail in a school or a program specifically is ineligible for Title IV. If it fails 2 out of 3 years.
2 out of 3?
2 out of 3. And if it's in the zone, which is between 0.08 and 0.12, it can stand after the fourth year in the zone, it's done. It's failed. So which means, put this in perspective, the earnings for year four of schools have just found they have 4-year programs in the zone. The fourth year is earning year 2017. Mm-hmm. It's a retroactive rule.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Retroactive back?
Yeah. You've already submitted your year two stuff. We're in the middle of year three. Year three earnings is 2016. It is October.
Oh,
so
wow.
Anybody that just found out has to... they would have to raise salaries a significant amount. Now, salaries are SSA data for the calendar year. So if a student got $120,000 a year job December 1st, then they made $10,000.
Oops.
SSA data, it's not family income. It's not household income.
Just SSA.
SSA, individual based for the calendar year. Okay? Got it?
Got it.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I got it.
Here's the timeline. It's important. So I want to get in the timeline. 2 weeks ago, schools got their earnings data. Last week, we got our debt-to-earnings ratios. So we had our earnings data. We had our debt data a long time ago, but most schools didn't have the sophistication to pull that together and do the comparison. Because your IT people won't know what they're looking at, and the FA guys won't know how to do the IT. So there's a couple of us, myself and Jeff Arthur, who are the only people I know that were able to find this out a week or so before the department told us. And our calculations were within a dollar. So we were able to, because the department's not issuing these in Excel files. The department's issuing these in text-delimited files. So you have to import them in the Excel, but have the key to know where the breaks are. And it's not really that hard if you know where to look. If anybody wants me to show you, I can show your executive team how to do it, so you don't have to have IT people who are going to squirrely anyway, or blah, blah, blah. It's not too hard, but if you want, I can show you how so you can get an early start on it. So we got that. So we all found out if we have programs that are in the zone or fail or passing last week. I have reviewed every publicly traded company's SEC reports, and no one's filed an 8K yet. Okay, which is, that is coming any minute. I'm totally shocked that that hasn't occurred yet.
What's that mean?
An 8K is
basically... No, I know what an 8K is, but what...
Pretty soon, you have not had public schools say, I've got programs in the zone, or fail, or anything. That's going to hit the news probably in the next 14 days. Because public companies are going to have to start filing 8Ks. Okay, so...
It's the 8K that they'll have to file to make that?
Or 8, right? Not 10?
It's 8K. I think it's 8, not the 10.
8, yeah. So they'll have to file that pretty soon.
I always get those two mixed up.
I'm pretty sure it's 8Ks. And just in terms of timeline, again, it is debt to earnings, which has an assumption of an interest rate. Okay, the interest rate is the average interest rate of either 3 or 6 years of UNSUB for the 6 years preceding the cohort they're measuring. So the cohort for 2014 is 11-12. So the 6 years prior is 6.8. The 3 years prior is 6.8. So the interest rate is 6.8. Now that gets better in the future, but only after programs are killed. That's the programs are done. Well before that. January 1st are when the newest, this coming January 1st, January 1st, 2017, is when the newest disclosures are required, which includes hand-delivering government-issued disclosure forms to anybody before they make a financial commitment. As of January 1, that's required. Hand-delivered document. If they're online students, then you have to record that they've done it electronically and have to save every email trying to gather. That's January 1, 2017. That's pretty close. So what's going to happen is a lot of people's enrollment agreements are going to have certifications that they got that, or that it's part of the enrollment agreement that they wouldn't be able to sign without having seen this. And so that's where I'm saying you guys probably should think about, if it's a title school, where's your disclosure requirement in your enrollment agreement? Okay? The 2015 GE year is what we just got data on. October 1... So right now, we had to submit 2016 GE data, which was the most current, 12-13 academic year. We had to submit that on October 1. It's no coincidence that the department waited till after we submitted our second year of data, aka what would fail a program. They waited till after we got that before they gave us earnings data, because they wanted to keep you blind until they already showed you. So there's no way to cure stuff, basically. And it was in telling, because when we got it, we're like, holy cow, we would have changed our SIP structure for sure.
Right.
But it's too late. There's also a thing called the transition year, which is kind of a too late thing, too. And transition year just applies to this technique that the department's saying, well, yeah, we understand it's retroactive, but if the debt of your current students is less than it was of the people in 12, we'll let you use that. But it's not really the current, it's the most recently completed academic year, which isn't really a thing that you could influence. And you'd think that that's better than 9, 10, 10, 11, 11, 12. It's not going to have gone down that fast. And also, their idea is that tuition actually influences debt, which we all know is not true. And we've also seen in our data that they have not chosen the lesser of tuition or debt in the calcs, in which we will challenge them. However, they've also said that discounts and institutional scholarship, which was, just crediting out tuition, doesn't count.
Oh, they got it now.
It did in the original promulgation, but they took it out. So that everybody that had strategies originally, we're one of them that does that, they took that all away. So, kind of, they did that retro. And then new audit guides just got released, including GE. topics. The new audit guides got released just in the last couple weeks. They go live for the fiscal year 2017, which would be audits in early 2018. But they've asked schools to start using them early, of course. Okay? Now, that's the first time new audit guides have been issued by the department in 20 years. And they do include a lot of things other than GE, like the thing Trish and I talk about a lot, which is the topic of third-party servicers. Okay, so here's something I think the state needs to deal with. The definition of a program, I think most of you guys know this, is the combination of these things. It has nothing to do with what we call a program. It's not what you've licensed as a program. It's not the name of the major or the name of the program. Nothing to do with it. So it is your OPID. Okay, so that's important because we heard some schools that are lumping a lot of stuff under OPID, a lot of campuses under one OPID. Okay, so that means that a singular program that is succeeding in one school and in another school across the country with a crappier economic area fails. They're all gone.
All gone, because they're all under the same.
Seriously?
One. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, so one. So it's OP, the combination of these numbers, OPID, credential level, certificate or diploma, associates, bachelor's, graduate, and that's a number, like 2 or 3 or 5. Okay, OPID, credential, zip code. Okay, got that? So 11.0801.
I just didn't understand what you said a little earlier about that you would have restructured SIP. So how would that affect?
Okay, so if you have, I've got four majors grouped under one SIP code. Mm-hmm. So if that code
fails,
you take them all down. But also, here's the thing: if you have to have 30 people in the cohort, the 2-year cohort, and if you don't have 30 and 2, they go to 4. And if you don't have 30 and 4, you're clear. They ignore you. Kind of. I'm talking about that in a minute. So if you just have a bunch of fragmented programs that are all under 30, you're golden. If you have a number of programs that are only at 30 when they hit 4 years, you've just picked up students that are in their path 2 more years because you have the early part of the cohort that will bring your earnings up. Okay, so they ignore programs that don't make the cutoff, right? So here's what schools are going to do. They're going to start fragmenting. But if you're in the zone or failing and then you pass but you have less than 30, it's not a pass. Passes don't count either under 30. They're ignored. So if you came in failing, you can't cure without it more than 30. So then you got to combine the SIPs. However, this is really important to know. If you fail, then they stop looking at SIP, the whole SIP string, but they just look at the first four. So it goes like 11.08.01 and then 02 and 03 and 04, which would be distinguished as individual programs. Mm-hmm. But if one of them fails, the whole suite goes. All of 11.08. Mm-hmm. Okay? Got it? So there's an issue with different SIP and there's an issue with the separation of them. So one of the things I think you should do very quickly when schools have the program listings is you should enumerate those in the same definition so you can have an idea and hopefully population. So what I would do if I was in your shoes and on renewals and stuff, I'd have a sheet. It's like program, including OPID, SIP, credential, student count, SIP code. So you would know what's out there. Got it? Okay, so just on definition of a year, let me talk about that. If you read the reg, it's a real bitch to know what years they're talking about. And so I'll just wrap through this real quick. There's the gainful employment year. So we just went through the 2015 gainful employment year. There's the cohorts of the academic year, which was the 10-11, 11-12 year that was for the 15 gainful employment year with the 2014 earnings year. With the interest years of 6 years before 10-11, those were reported in 2016, the reporting year. Okay. And then there's the disclosure year, which then comes later. And then there's the transitional year, which is the whatever the most current academic year debt is that you could use instead of the original debt.
Do you have this mapped out that you can give it to us? So
yeah, I'm going to send you all this later.
Thank you.
Just cover all their bases and try to catch up.
Yeah, they just. But also, just the definition of years, you could tell that a bunch of prepubescent twits wrote this part of the thing, because like they're just, oh, you know, I just use the same word over and over that means something different. And to them, it makes total sense. Okay, so here's the problematic programs I've been talking to people and hearing about. But it's really important to know that length matters more than anything. The length of a program is what impacts debt more than anything. Four-year degrees, you have more debt. Shorter programs, there's less time for debt. And it's not about tuition. Nobody can lower their tuition enough to really influence debt. It's about the debt. So, and the length is how long you get, because that's what determines how much you're eligible for, even if it's on private and that kind of thing. So, allied health programs that are like, so the entry level allied health, like medical assisting and that kind of stuff, if you're at an associate's level, you're going to have a hell of a time.
That's what we're having problems with.
Certificate programs like diplomas, they're okay.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm talking. Length is an issue. So on the entry level stuff, shortening those up is good. Now bear in mind, if you had a program, let's say you got a certificate, an associate's, and a bachelor's, and the bachelor's fails, but you have an associate's, you get to keep the, you know, a program's defined by the credential and the CIT. So you might just have to kill off the longer one. Now some schools didn't do that, or they used to have 2+2s and they went away from that. Like, my team has been trying to get rid of my associate's programs forever. But I've got a major insulation that I can say, well, if one fails off, I can always do these associates and have them complete on a 2+2 at the different bachelor's.
Yeah.
So for that situation, I would hope you still have your diploma version
right. And
the associates, because you can always diploma and matriculate them into a different associate's. But at any rate, longer entry-level allied health are a problem. Massage therapy is a real problem. I was surprised to hear Casey say she didn't have it.
She passed.
Yeah. So I'm interested to know how long her programs are, but those are still very difficult. Fashion's impossible. Cosmo's hard, basically because there's just a lot of unreported income. It's SSA earnings.
How about culinary? That's got to be tough, too, no?
Culinary falls into this. So I have been trying like hell to get someone on the phone with culinary. I know a couple people that are passing with culinary, but they did the same thing I just talked about. They shortened it up. They took them out of associates, moved them into diplomas. Mm-hmm. They really brought the price down, and they're only successful with big cohorts. So a friend of mine's got a 500-student culinary school, which is big as a brand or as a, you know, a program, and that's doing fine, but only because he saw it coming 5 years ago and cut it down. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens with Cordon Bleu. You know, they hopefully have nothing to hide on that since they're already teaching out, but it would suck if they lost eligibility before they finished. So, because bear in mind, fail in 2 years, right? Year one's done. We just got our information. We already uploaded our information for year two. If you failed in year one, you're failing in year two. So I would be very interested to find out who failed in year one in the information you just sent, and start bracing yourself, because they're not going to wait till this time next year for year two. They're going to give that to us anytime in 2017. And then you'll have 2 years of fails, and they'll be out. So if you got a fail program, chances are it's done, and you're just waiting for the department to tell you. Now, here's the deal. If you have a program that could lose eligibility in the next year, there's a whole new set of required disclosures and warnings you have to issue to students. So, as AK comes out, there's going to be a bunch of programs that are on fail. Those same schools will then have to issue warnings immediately to students. Now, the AKs will come out before challenges, hopefully, and then they don't have to necessarily file the warning until they've done the challenges and the appeals and crap like that. But arts programs are tough. Anything with non-reported income fields. Jobs that have rite of passage, you know, like in this job you have to do X, Y, Z first. They have a carve out for medical, you know, for the internships and that kind of thing, but there's some things where you have to be a grip you know, if you're a filmmaker, you have to be a grip for your first year, right? So those are going to be tough because that's going to be in that earning period. Flight schools. I don't see how the hell a flight school can
pass. Oh, flight school. Yeah. Not under our jurisdiction.
Yeah, they are. Emory-Riddle.
Emory-Riddle's under our jurisdiction.
Art schools. You got. I think that's why I think they're. See, I think that that strategy a lot is influenced by them realizing that they may not be able to survive the parent OPID.
Right.
So that's an issue. Larger programs can be dangerous, but smaller programs are safe because you're under the 30. Older programs are at more risk than newer. Because I know people right now that started the program after 10, 11, 11, 12. Or they started the program in 14, 15. They got years before this comes out. And those guys I've talked to, and they're like, oh, we're safe. We're just hoping that there'll be a new president in place by then in four more years. Or that the administration will change by then. So that's a little Pollyanna. But another interesting note is female-heavy programs are dangerous. Because there's too often the woman is then starts a family shortly after she graduates. And she's out of the earning pool.
I heard that. I talked about that today.
Yeah. Okay, so you can't appeal earnings. If you think that the SSA is wrong, you can't appeal them, but the requirements are very stingy. You have to have more than 50% of the population of that earning year report, and you have to go back. When you do the survey, it's like, think about 2014. How much were you making? You have to have it independently audited by someone that can do that audit. And then I have yet to find anybody that I know as a third-party servicer that is going to do this for people and take on the liability. So, and then if you get 50%, you have to prove it's a non-biased sample, which is tricky. You have to know enough about statistics to know that that's, you know, they're not just saying statistically valid sample of your population. More than 50% and non-biased. So I think we talked about a lot of that. The issue I've got is what happens when programs start shutting down and Stripe doesn't cover it, programs shut down. Schools are like, or students are kicked out on the street because they're like, well, tough. You got to pay cash.
Can you sue the federal government for funds?
They'll say sue the school, which is part of the reason they're trying to get arbitration agreements out of enrollment agreements right now. So that's something I would think the state needs to consider. What happens when programs shut down in this, and what also happens if what's the impact if a program shuts down on the school? And that's why I think you need to know what the populations are. Because an Emory-Riddle that has lots of programs but loses 80% of its student population and doesn't have a bond is going to go down.
Can we enroll with that program?
That's why I think you should. You might consider on the form, on your new form, OPID, credential, zip code, population.
The schools would get all picked up when we start to say that.
Well, one of the things you can do, we're talking Title IV schools.
It's only
at least for the national accreditors, that's required for almost every national accreditor. You can just say submit the recent annual report, which has.
Which we do.
And
we used to.
And IPES is changing too, the lineup of this as well. So.
Yeah, IPES sort of deals with that. Well, they have phone enrollment and stuff, so yeah.
They're changing. So it's important to know that it's probably too late for a lot of people because that zone length and the length of time and the discretion or the transition years, the shorter the program, the shorter that time is. You know, bachelor's are longer. I know that I've got a bachelor's degree. I got one in a zone. I have to cure it with earnings in 2017. It's too late to affect that. It's too late to do anything other than get it out in 2017. Now, I think I can do that. I'm not that far off to get it out of zone and then change all my zip codes. But there's also a challenge if everybody looked at their SIPs and like, shit, I should have done this. And how do you then fix SIPs? I didn't talk to you about that, but there's going to be a requirement that like figure out what you do to start updating SIPs because you also have to contemporaneously report SIPs in NSLDS, which is another issue is when the 150 rule came out, it changed the guidance for schools on how you report your SIP codes for matriculating students in a term. So if you're matriculating an intern, you're supposed to report to NSLDS. If you're in a major of culinary and you're also taking classes in accounting, you're supposed to technically upload to NSLDS both zip codes, which I doubt most schools have line of sight on if that's occurring, which creates this whole paper trail for the department to kind of watch if you're screwing with the system right. as well. Okay, so disclosure requirements come out January 1st. There's already a smattering disclosures that you have to do that are ridiculous. There's new ones. And then this summer, the department's did a stealth NPRM. Have you guys seen this, the NPRM? See, they had borrower defense repayment going through, right? Mm-hmm. And then underlying that, they did a new gainful employment NPRM that I don't know very many people saw. It's just on gainful employment disclosures.
Do you know offhand what the date of that was?
It was maybe July or August. So that came out, which greatly expands the required disclosure requirements. So, for instance, we're all of a sudden we are already having the going to have to disclose program CDR. So the department's going to issue us any day now a whole smattering of information, new stuff we've had that's supposed to never had to disclose before. And it's only one sector, which is going to create mass confusion. But there's also, like I said, a whole another segment of disclosures coming. That NPRM and the borrower defense repayment NPRM, we should expect before November 1st, which is a couple days away.
Okay.
So it has to be published by November 1st in order to go in by July 1st next year. So just in the next couple days, be braced for that. So just in terms of what's going to happen in the news, be ready for two new NPRMs that hit formal registers. Be ready for 8Ks. Be ready for warnings and kind of a very tense fall, potentially. Hopefully, it's better than I'm saying. A lot of schools that I know in our circles were surprised by some of the stuff. It was really great for me. Which leads me to my next point on consumerism. I got some data finally that shows earnings, where I've got programs with $120,000, $130,000 a year earnings that the department gave me that I'm technically not allowed to use and disclose, because the department, as you guys know, requires student-level verification for any claim, which creates now this issue. So the department said I have to tell students that they're going to make $110,000 a year if they graduate from this program, but I'm not allowed to use $110,000 a year in my enrollment process because it's not verifiable at student level, because the SSA will not issue that. They only issue the average or the median in mass.
Is this public schools as well?
No.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Nor the nonprofits. However,
I need a good laugh. Thanks.
However, I would expect while this isn't going to happen, that a lot of the disclosure requirements, and I think that a lot of the earning requirements will start coming down the pipe. Because if you want to do a Wayne Gretzky and ski to where the puck is, College Scorecard, College Navigator, go hit those. They're already reporting repayment rates. They're already reporting earnings per school. That's where they're going.
Where is that again?
College Navigator, College Scorecard. Scorecard's the one you guys probably don't look at the most. Also an issue is going to be, like, boot camps are heavily advertising salaries. Title schools can't do that. Right? Title schools can't even use the BLS data. They're getting in trouble for advertising BLS data because it's not necessarily representative of your grant. So there's going to be kind of a whole consumerism topic here. And this is one of my asks. I think the state has a justification and a rationale to make an ask of the department of what are we going to do? And can we require some of the same consumerism from the publics as we are from these guys, because it's the same program both places and it's creating mass confusion in our district. The other issue is going to be the warnings that we already talked about. I think that's going to be a massive issue. With the state, I think that's the next step. So, what I was going to say, I think that for you guys, figuring out how you're going to handle probation or warnings or sanctions or tracking on a programmatic level issue is a challenge. I think asking about GE at a program level is something you should start doing right away for title schools, especially like the guys earlier today I would ask, because I think it makes a difference on if you're going to bond or not. If you got half of your students are in a zone or fail program, you need a bond.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
So, and they know. They knew today. They're probably happy they didn't ask, but I would start asking. If it's a, now, of course, if it's a brand new program school, they're not going to know, or that kind of thing. So only title schools have been in long enough to have it. Here's what I think you might consider to be proactive and action-oriented. I think having a checklist for enrollment agreement, start thinking about what will need to be added both for this and the new bar defense to repayment, which bans arbitration agreements.
Is that done?
We're going to find out it before November 1.
Yeah. That's right. You said that.
Yep, and all kinds of stuff in that. I think the easiest thing to do is definitely the state should start rethinking how you guys define a program to be SIP code OPIG credential.
We'd have to change the law as well. Yeah.
Of a program?
Because we don't define it.
Can't you just track it?
You'd have to.
Because you have a form that you make people give you at the program, and every time they do a supplemental program out, you just ask for that.
Good on that, but I mean existing programs.
Let me change this. Instead of defining it that way, how about ask for that information on that program so you can put it in the database?
So you can track it.
We don't have to. No, we can't tell them what schools to do as put together as OPIDs.
Well, and frankly, they can have programs that are not eligible. What I think the state needs to do is be able to track what a program is defined by the Fed, and which of the majors or programs that schools have are in which Fed program. Because if you look at someone's ECAR versus the state license, they don't match. I can tell you more about it. I think, in my mind, it's just updating the form, and the hard part is really updating your database and website.
You can't even get our database.
Well, you won't get the database fixed until you start gathering it. I think you should petition legislature to have a state earnings system. So in order to appeal the earnings, you either have to do your own survey, which is very problematic, which I told you about, or you can not use SSA and rely on a state-sponsored earnings system, which is not you guys, but legislature would create a state earnings system. There's some states that do it. And there's a rationale that you could ask for that. Schools are not allowed to limit debt. And the state might make an ask to the department of, we would like you to consider letting schools limit debt. Because I could curb debt in some of my programs and just say you're only allowed to take 70% out.
That'd be nice.
Love it.
Big stipends.
Yeah. Well, I guess for schools, and if you want to talk to me offline, like one of the biggest strategies we've got is we've got a lot of military students that take no title. And they don't count in your debt. So if students have zero debt, that doesn't count.
It doesn't help you. They won't allow you.
They ignore them in the distribution curve of the debt because they don't have statutory authority to look at.
It's creative statistics.
It's ridiculous.
If you take Pell out on them, they come in as zeros. So anybody that's cash pay, what schools are missing is you guys should at least apply to see if you get Pell.
Yeah.
And you pick up a couple zeros, you're moving that number to the left quite a bit. So you're getting students to borrow $1 is far better than getting cash. Is the concept there.
When it comes to 90-10.
Yes. But anyway, it's a frequency distribution. People aren't thinking about it as a distribution issue. getting guidance on what we're allowed to promote on earnings is in your court. Like, this state board watches consumerism like a hawk. Now you're going to have this earnings issue of disclosures, and can I brag about it? Now, can I say, well, shit, I don't have student loans. This is the government gave me this number. What do we do about that? Because I want to use mine. And then I think it's worth making an ask of the DOE mandating or considering the application of this disclosures at the Publix. If some, you know, if it's the same program, they should consider that. And then, of course, the some sort of classification of programs for the state to have an eye on this program's going to go. And there's some non-punitive way to track that. So that's it. Went a little long. Sorry.
Should we have the DeVries, the UOPs, the GCUs come before us, like in January, to report on their GE standings? Just to give us an update.
The Publix?
They're the ones that have the biggest dislocated students.
Carrington.
And just one question for the Strife, because I've asked it a couple of times about, you know, those schools don't pay Strife. They don't pay into the Strife fund.
The nationals don't.
Right.
The regionals don't.
So, I mean, that's obviously a concern as we move forward that we don't have if we don't have a bond on them, and we can use that bond for any of these potential closers. But if U of P went down, not saying that would ever happen, but if that did, Strife is done in about an hour and a half.
Well, what is Strife? Well,
Strife does not cover by program.
It's not.
It's institutional only.
Right, but if some of the components of GE
kill a school,
there it does.
Then the program still has the. We still have the responsibility, even though we've collected no money.
Are we done?
Yeah.
Well,
I'm
done with my presentation.
Okay.
Great. Thank you very much for your time and sitting through all of our meetings and giving us this information. And we close the meeting at 5:20. Meeting's adjourned.
So.
We should have.